You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates. You're listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join Coach C, a USA Strength and Conditioning Hall of Famer, every Monday night as he and a variety of guests, including former players, former and current coaches, pastors, and others, will discuss relevant issues in coaching today's athlete, with the goal of equipping the athlete and those coaching them with the physical, mental, and spiritual armor necessary to live their best life. Here's Coach Connors.
Welcome to Absolute Empowerment. I'm Jeff Connors, and tonight we have another fantastic guest in the house, two-time Super Bowl champion, former ECU defensive lineman who I had the pleasure of coaching, Walter Scott. Walter, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so Walter, it's been quite a while, and you have been extremely successful in your career, and we want to talk about that first. You have had a career in music.
Yes.
And that is very unique in itself. There's a lot of people who aspire to have a career in music, but sometimes it doesn't pan out for them. In fact, I'd have to say most of the time it doesn't pan out for them. In fact, within my own family, my son, Bo, decided that he was going to be a movie star. So I sent him out to Seattle Film School out in Seattle, and it cost me a lot of money. And I think he got like 10 seconds in one movie, but he had to go for it. So
it's great.
But yeah, the music business is very interesting. Of course, I tune into The Voice and all these shows where people come on, and I like those shows because basically it kind of highlights people who overachieve and find themselves. And we have really, as a coach, you look for the same thing in athletics, so that's why those shows intrigue me. But so where was your passion born for music?
Yes, my passion born with music, it first started out when I was young, in the crib, a baby. My father, he was in a Christian quartet. They used to call them quartet groups. So it's like three or four singers. Most of the time it was four singers. And I grew up seeing my father sing in the quartet group. And as me and my brother got older, he kind of left that so he could spend more time with us, because they were traveling, up and down the East Coast, and that required a lot of time. So that was the start. I was always busy with my hands. I had two other siblings. I was the middle child, had an older brother and a younger sister, and I was the busybody. My father came up with a name called Wally. My childhood name, everybody at home in my town know me as Wally, and it came from Wally Doodle All Day. So my father used to sing something Wally Wally Doodle All Day. So so I guess when I was like in the second or third grade, my grandmother told my mom, my parents, hey, y'all gotta give this boy something to do with his hands. And so we got into piano lessons. So we all had to get into piano lessons. And I was the one that took that piano and took off with it and achieved a lot of awards in junior high and high school with the youth classical musician, that level. And I won a lot of awards with music. I was in the marching band. I was in the show choir. I had to play at church, so so that was a non-negotiable. So that was the start. That was the start. I can remember in the fourth grade, growing up, I grew up in the country, so we only had AM radio, and it was like a few radio stations on FM. And the only radio station we had was a top 40 station. So, growing up hearing, with that top 40, it kind of put me in the box to where I heard some R&B, heard a lot of pop music, heard some crossover country music, Kenny Rogers, Lionel Richie, Stevie Wonder, just that, all of that playlist. And in the fourth grade, I just remember the thought, like, man, how would I create music to sound like that on the radio when I, at that time, only I had was a piano, you know, to practice my music. So that was the start. That was really the start. Going into high school, I was more so, I didn't even play football as a freshman in the ninth grade. I played in a marching band, and that, it looked like that was my direction, you know, at the time. So that was the start, pretty much the start.
Well, of course, I remember the first time I became aware of this was when you brought your keyboard in the weight room one day, I think. And so we started talking a little bit about your interest in music and how you get that keyboard. Tell me how you get that keyboard again.
Daryl Jones. So Daryl Jones came in as a freshman my third year. I guess it was like 1993, maybe 1993. And for his high school graduation present, his grandfather bought him a professional keyboard. And once DJ, everyone knew him as DJ. Once DJ kind of figured out that I knew how to play music, some kind of way it just wound up being in my dorm room all the time. And and I put a lot of time in there. Everybody would hear me playing the same thing over and over and over again, making my little beats to try to learn how to perfect them. And so that was kind of like the start. And before my second year in 1992, my sophomore year, some kind of way I found myself going down to the, you know, at the bottom of the hill, because, you know, we stayed in Scott Dorm.
Yeah.
At the bottom of the hill was the School of Music. And I would go there every day to do my studying. And, you know, whenever I would take breaks, I would go and probably practice some classical piano on a piano. Or at that time, they had like a room called the technology room. And that's where I first started. That's where I started making my first beats.
Yeah.
You know, started from the bottom up, you know, just learning how to make it, drums, bass lines and everything. And that's where I would be at night.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You grew up not too far from Atlanta, the Atlanta area, right?
I grew up like 2 hours and 15 minutes, some 2 hour and 15 minute drive from South Carolina. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I guess what I'm interested in now is, from a professional standpoint, you know, what have been some of your greatest moments in music, and kind of educate us as to, you know, what you've accomplished, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. The great thing was, the first start, this is real interesting. My last year playing in 1999-2000 season, I was playing for Miami Dolphins. And so I acquired a bad injury that was it for football. I damaged some nerves. It took a while for the medical staff to figure out exactly what the issue was. My body was having some crazy responses, but I wound up, it took time for them to figure out that I had damaged this femoral nerve that runs on the outside of your thigh and locks into the lower lumbar of your spine. And from that point, I was on injured reserve. Once I kind of got situated, kind of knowing what the plan was and knowing getting on the rehab plan, DJ Daryl Jones gave me a call, because, you know, he's from Orlando. And so DJ called me and was just like, "Hey, Big Walt, man, I need you to come to Orlando. You in Miami now?" I said, yeah. And so at the time, DJ was working with one of Otis Redding's sons, Dexter Redding. And so, he wound up being my first mentor, and, you know, just going into his studio. At that time, I would be coming up to Orlando, Backstreet Boys, Britney Spears, Brandy, a lot of big artists would be coming in and recording in Dexter's studio. And I had an opportunity to sit and see, like, okay, this is how they put this stuff together. So, you know, I moved home, I retired in 2000. moved home to South Carolina. It took me like a year and a half to be able to walk correct again. So I got through that process, and now it was like, okay, it's time for me to do my music. So for a while, like in between 2002, 2003, I would be traveling in between Orlando for a week and working with their community, come to Atlanta. And in 2003, I was like, hey, it's time for me to move to Atlanta. And so, hey, I've had a lot of success with the football thing, but I had to start from the bottom up, just like coming to ECU as a freshman. You know, once you come in as a freshman, it doesn't matter how much you did, you know, as a, in your high school career. Now you got to start from the bottom up and gain that confidence in yourself, as well as you have to build that confidence in the coaches that they can, you know, depend on you to get out there and do what you need to do in practice, as well as in the game. So I had to come in and work from the bottom up. Came into Atlanta. My second mentor, he had pretty much has more hits than anybody here in Atlanta. Daryl Simmons. He pretty much, he grew up with Babyface. He's a legendary artist, songwriter. So Daryl's written for Britney Spears, Boyz II Men, Madonna, all of that. And so I sat up under him, learned the different things, because, what I do, and let's Atlanta is a melting pot of a lot of creative people that come to, you have artists move to Atlanta, you have musicians move to Atlanta, you have aspiring songwriters move to Atlanta, and you have aspiring producers, which you can say beat makers, move to Atlanta. And that's a melting pot of creative people to create the music for artists. When artists are always coming in and out of Atlanta seeking the right songs that can help them get to that next space, right?
Yeah.
And so I was a beat maker, more so a beat maker, great with melodies, singing melodies, but not strong with lyrics. So coming into Atlanta, I had to start from the bottom up, had to make my beats competitive.
Yeah. So,
Coach, you know about the pedigree of being competitive, so you can kind of tie that into, Oklahoma drill, inside drill, the game one-on-one. Oh, sometimes you gotta beat a double team. And so, but to win, you have to have determination to build the confidence. And building that confidence, you had to have done a lot of things with repetition. Football, every Monday and Thursday, we doing upper body. We're doing plyometrics. We're doing sprints. Every Tuesday and Friday, we're doing lower body, back, and doing some type of conditioning, right? And so that's repetition. That's repetition. And so I had, that was instilled in me. That was instilled in me from my past life doing the football thing. And so I just kind of worked my way up, building the relationships. And so to move forward, I've been blessed. I've worked with a lot of some older artists, some newer artists. I've worked with Sierra, 112, T-Boss from TLC, Escape. I've worked with a lot of rappers. But the most notable song that I've been blessed to be a part of was Chris Brown's first single on his sophomore album, released in 2007, Wall to Wall. And that was like, okay, man, okay, you put the work in to get to that point. And I've been blessed to be a part of records that have had substantial amounts of radio success, but this record right here, being that Chris Brown was already a pop star coming off of his first album, really just jumped and put me in some good positions,
Gotcha.
But it didn't come easy.
Well, being in the weight room and the collegiate program, I listened to rap music for about 30 years.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to ask you about a few artist that I was a little bit familiar with in the Atlanta area to see if you had kind of worked with him. How about Lil Jon?
Lil Jon? I've met Lil Jon. I've never worked with him. And you know, Lil Jon is a phenomenal producer.
Yeah.
He's a phenomenal
East Side Boys, right?
Yeah. So Lil Jon is an artist and a producer. So, okay. Yeah.
How about T.I.?
T.I.? I've met T.I. I've never worked with T.I. I've worked with more R&B artists than hip-hop artists. You know, a few hip-hop releases that I've had over the years was Royce da 5'9". He's from Detroit in one of Eminem's clique. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Just work through relationships to make that happen. I don't want to think deep. I've worked with a lot of people. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when I was coaching at UNC, I helped with women's basketball too. And Ludacris used to come to Ivory Lattice games, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was crazy. I mean, how these rappers would follow women's basketball somehow. It was very intriguing to me who was going to show up next at the next game, you know?
Yeah.
Cat Williams was in the locker room one day in a mink coat. Yeah. So the other ones were like Future. And how about Gucci Mane? Was he from Atlanta?
Gucci Mane. Yeah, Gucci Mane's from Atlanta. Yeah, he's from Atlanta.
Yeah, so, and then, you know, of course, I had to listen to every Jeezy song at least 400 times, you know. So, you know, I was a little bit familiar. So I was going to ask you if you had written the lyrics to any song. You said you don't do lyrics much.
No, I'm not more so a lyricist. I'm more so beat maker. You know, in the more etiquette way of saying beat making is more so musical composition. So it's a top and a bottom. So like when you're listening to the music on the radio, you hear the music, the bed of music, and you hear that vocal on top, right? And so it's words and it's melodies with, you know, with the vocal performance on top of the bed of music. Now the producer's responsibility is like a contractor. Okay, this is the house. Okay, I need the plumbing. I need all of these things put together, and it needs to be sitting right sonically.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm a garage drummer. I love rhythm. I mean, but you know, as far as it goes with me is quarter time, eighth time, and 16th time. And that's about it, you know, and I just try to get the fills in and stay with the timing of
there you go. There you go.
Yeah, I love rhythm, man. I think there's when you coach, as far as I'm concerned, I think athletics is rhythmic. And there's just a lot of things in this world that are rhythmic. And, you know, that's why I can relate to that.
Yeah.
So very interesting.
Let's
talk about your family. Tell me a little bit about your wife, your kids.
Yeah. I got married in 2005 and just been, you know, building a great, strong relationship with my wife, Sabrina. Yeah. And we were blessed to have two kids. Well, they're teenagers now, you know, when kids, upper kids, you know. It's another Walter, but we chose not to make him a junior. So he's Walter Robert Scott. And he's in the 11th grade doing a great thing academically. And my daughter, she's in the 8th grade and she's going to graduate and go to the 9th grade. So she's doing a great job. And another major blessing is my mother-in-law. She's been living with us since my daughter has been born. So, you know, we have a pretty active home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so maybe a few questions on the Christian side of things. You know, how do you lead your family?
Well, this is this is like a testimony for me. And one thing that I've learned, and I'll go ahead and throw this, you know, this one scripture in, and it's Proverbs the 29th chapter and 18th verse. Right. You know, man without vision, they perish, right? And the opposite contrast of that is man with vision prosper, right? And so, you know, a kid coming into Atlanta, just 30-year-old guy coming into Atlanta, haven't gotten quite married, engaged. And if someone were to ask me, hey, man, what are you doing? What are you doing? I would say, man, I'm about to blow up with this music. Bam, 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 bam. That's what I'm saying, right? Okay.
Yeah.
And so as we grow older, that was only one. Now that I understand, that was only one pillar of success, right? Because then that's only one dimension of wealth, career. You know, you have spiritual wealth, you have health wealth, you have relationship wealth, and you know, a few other. It could be fun wealth too, as well, right? So
well,
I was only speaking one thing. I was only speaking one thing into existence. I was just like, you know, I'm engaged. I'm just saying, hey, I'm going to be doing this. You know, I'm going to have these songs on the radio. Bam, bam, bam. Yes, I've been blessed for that to happen, right? And so as God expands our territory, we got to, you know, learn how to open up the lens to be like, okay, I'm going to speak into this. I'm going to speak life into this. I'm going to speak life into my health. I'm going to speak life into my relationship with my wife. I'm going to speak life into my relationship with, you know, over my children. And so, you know, as me and my wife started having, and all relationships have their challenges and kind of get dipped in the fire or dipped into some pressure, right? Because that's how diamonds come. You got to have pressure for gains, pressure for success. You got to go through that opposite contrast of happiness and joy, this and that. God's going to challenge us. And so in the midst of some of those challenges, even with challenges with music business, this and that, I was blessed to, you know, at that point in time, I was searching, reading personal developmental books, spiritual developmental books. And I kind of caught that whiff of, okay, I need to speak this. I need to close my eyes and I need to see a phenomenal, successful relationship with my wife. And start learning how to be more in detail. I'm so grateful how me and my wife are prospering with harmony, peace, love, joy, and increasing this and increasing that. And if not, that could just be sitting dormant. And I may be prospering over here with this music, but haven't learned the skill in how to harmonize what I am what I'm visualizing every day. And that's something that I practice as well. But to come back to that question that you asked me, I had to learn how to awaken my imagination and do what I've been doing for football and music and put that into my marriage,
right?
To foresee and what I would like to create and manifest, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, because times move forth. You know what I'm saying? So hopefully I answered your question with that. I took it kind of like a roundabout, but
absolutely. I love the answer, man.
Okay.
Keep preaching it, brother.
Hey.
So another thing I want to ask you is, what gifts do you notice in your children?
The gifts that I notice in my children, and it's real interesting. My son has more of a the way he can solve problems and analyze things and his posture through challenges is more like my wife, right? Sabrina. And my daughter can tend to just that wily thing being everywhere and being gibberish and just doing silly stuff. She could be more so like me. So yeah.
Gotcha. Well,
Yes, sir.
I really think that when you recognize these gifts, it helps us to guide them toward God's purpose for them.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes we don't even recognize our own gifts until later on, you know.
Yeah.
We finally find ourselves in our purpose in life. You had a very, very unique experience also in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what year did you go to? You went to the Packers first, is that correct?
Yes. So this was real interesting. So I went to the Packers and graduated in 96. I want to throw that out there too. I graduated from East Carolina in 96 and signed. Really wanted to. I would have loved to get drafted, but I wound up being an unsigned free agent. But things worked out. Went into Green Bay, and during training camp, a lot of the defensive linemen started getting injured. And that was an opportunity for me. And I stood up and really performed well in the 2-a-days in training camp practice, which put me in a position to where I started getting a whole lot of reps during the pre-games. And so the last cut of the season of preseason, that last cut, I didn't get cut, but I wound up getting traded to, which I felt was a major accomplishment. I wound up getting traded to New England Patriots. And so came into New England Patriots. And when I came right in New England Patriots, I went straight to, on the active roster. I played some as a rookie, which I feel was a great success. And so some point in time in November, they started, the DBs started having a lot of injuries. And so Coach Parcells had to call me in and they had to let me go. But, once they let me go, he told me Green Bay was going to be flying me back to Green Bay the next day. And so I went, I had not released and I went back to New England and went back to Green Bay. And so we wound up going to the Super Bowl to play New England. And so
that's insanity,
that was great. That was a great experience. But I want to make sure I set the record right now. I didn't win 2 Super Bowl rings. So,
okay.
My second year, I actually got allocated. You remember at that time before 2011, they had the NFL Europe, right?
Yes.
And so I got allocated to go to Rheinfire in Dusseldorf, Germany. And during that season, that's when we won the World Bowl. So I have a World Bowl ring and a Super Bowl ring.
I got you.
Which, to be honest with you, that was the best, the most educational. I've never been outside of the country. That was the most monumental experience in my life, living over in Europe for 3 months. Mm. And so
what was memorable about that?
Just seeing a lot of different cultures. I'll extend upon that. So I played for Rheinfire in Dusseldorf, Germany, right? And so they had a team in Barcelona. So we would fly to Barcelona to play Barcelona. Never been to Barcelona, Spain. Never been to Spain, Coach Gullis. And so they had a team in Frankfurt. They had a team in Berlin. They had a team in Bristol, England. Called the London Monarchs, which was like an hour and a half south of London. And so we flew there, and that's Amsterdam. And what's another team? Edinburgh, Scotland. Coach, phenomenal experience.
Yeah.
Phenomenal experience. I was a little shocked too, because, my parents and my family, I was 6 hours ahead in that, 6 hours ahead of, when you're talking about the time, I was 6 hours ahead of them. So, you know, didn't really talk with them much and stuff like that. Living over there, seeing a lot of different culture and different things, that I truly believe that was a true blessing for my taste of music as well.
Okay.
Yes, yes. So that was a great experience. Great experience.
You have had some unique experiences all the way around. When you were with Green Bay, former Pirate George Kuntz was there also, correct?
Yes, yes, yes. You remember I told you, like, my first mentor in the music industry was Dexter Redding, right? Otis Redding's son. My first mentor in mini camp was George Kuntz. It was a blessing. It was a true blessing to just have someone, because that's a different environment. You're going into mini camp and you're seeing the best of the best. You know, some of these offensive linemen that I had to spar against, some of them had four kids. They were 32 years old and they were a beast with their hands, with their technique. I mean, they were. And so I really had to learn fast. Like, everyone has to learn fast. I mean, even a freshman coming into East Carolina, you got to learn fast because the pace is picking up. Each level you go up, the pace is picking up, the responsibility has picked up and everything. So it's kind of like it was a blessing to catch on. I want to throw this out here. My second mentor was, may he rest in peace, the one and only Reggie White. It was just a blessing to see his leadership. He would give me some pointers in regards to my technique. One of the most longstanding, advice that he gave me was like, Walter, man, you know, your hips are kind of stiff, man. Like, go on into the gym and I want you to talk to Kent Johnson. Kent Johnson was the strength coach at Green Bay at the time, and talk to Kent Johnson. He has some drills for you to help you to open up those hips some. So as I started practicing that, this guy, how many times has he been to the Pro Bowl? He just told me this right here. Am I going to sit here and just continue to move on and just do whatever I do? Or am I going to follow exactly what he told me? So yeah. Kent Johnson gave me some hip mobility drills that I did every day in my performance and enhanced my performance. So,
well, I had Kent Johnson on a podcast because I know him. Really? And he talked a lot about Reggie White and his relationship with Reggie White. And mm-hmm. they were very close. And, of course, I did not coach George when he was at ECU, but during the summer he trained with me when he would come home. And he kept his cars at my house and so forth. I had a Hummer at my house. Nobody knew I had a Hummer at my house. But I went up to Green Bay as well, and took a look at what Kent was doing and so forth. But George at that time, he was that one summer he reported he benched 315 18 times and ran a 4.6. So
beast,
we had him ready to go.
Yeah.
Now, the year that you went to the Super Bowl, what city was that?
New Orleans.
Okay, so I was at that game.
Wow.
Yeah, George gave me some tickets.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, I got robbed. Went to the game, went back to where I was staying, went to sleep, woke up in the middle of the night with someone was in my room. And when I woke up, they ran out. So I'm happy to still be alive.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. That was my Super Bowl experience, But yeah, I was at that game.
Wow. Yeah, it was a great experience. Sorry you had to go through that, Coach, but
yeah. Well, yeah. You never know about New Orleans, I guess.
Yes, yes.
So let's go to ECU. You came in 1991 as a freshman, correct?
1991 as a freshman.
Yep. And did you redshirt?
No, I had to play.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm thinking of the defensive, you know, Zom Kumalai and Greg Gardill both weighed 241 pounds.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good.
Yes.
And you had old Tony Wortham. I love Tony.
Tony Wortham, yes, he's a good guy.
And I think there was a couple other D-linemen
there. Derrick Taylor. Yes. Daryl Taylor,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole group was – I mean, I saw that whole group as being a bunch of overachievers, really tough guys that overachieved. You know, some of them weren't very big. Some of them didn't have that much experience, but, you know, they got it done.
Yes, yeah.
And but that was a group that was very well coached, too, by Coach Kerry Gaudette, right?
Coach Gaudette.
Yes, sir. He carried that football around with no air in it.
You're right. those are the golden moments. Yes, I think that was a real good experience to come in as a freshman, and the leadership on that team, Jeff Blake, Robert Jones, what was the tight end name? Luke Fisher,
yeah.
You know, the running back, Van Buren. Like it was real interesting, that team. Definitely a memorable moment.
I got into town that May before the summer, and I had the football team by myself pretty much the whole summer until I finally was able to hire an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I had to kind of set the tone a little bit. You know, when Dion didn't show up for a workout one day, I went straight to his room, and he was a little bit surprised when I knocked on his door. Man, you talk about a bunch of talented guys, and we worked really hard that summer. I was very proud of that whole team, how we ran and, you know, how hard they worked and how they bought into what I was doing. So, that's a great memory for me. And of course, you know, I wanted to ask you who had recruited you.
Dale Steele came to the house, and with Bill Lewis, actually both of them, they came to the house to recruit me. Right. And the last time I came up to East Carolina, I think it was 2016. I brought my family up. I was talking to you about that. And that year when I came, the first person that I saw when I went up to the office was Dale Steele. I was going to see Ruffin McNeil just to go and shake his hand and see how he's doing. And around the corner, Dale Steele. And Coach Steele was telling my family the story about when they came to my house. And it was like he remembered it, like fully remembered when he came to my house and, you know, how I was kind of dragging my feet committing because, you know, coming from South Carolina, you know, an hour and a half from Columbia, South Carolina, the Gamecocks, 2 hours from Athens, Georgia, you know, those were the two schools that I wanted to really, that I dreamed of going to. Yeah. And, you know, I just didn't have that All-American stamp on me. Yeah. And so they were kind of, you know. But it worked out. I truly believe I went where God had for me to be.
So for you personally, what did that 1991 season mean to you?
Personally, just really, I was just more so keen on the leadership. It was a little bit tough starting out. I came in and fractured my finger and had to have a bone, had reconstruction surgery on my finger, on my right ring finger. And they put it, once I got a cast on and everything, I was back there playing. So I was pretty much figuring I was going to, they was going to redshirt me, but they needed me to come out there and, you know, to provide whatever reps needed to help out. But it was a great, but I will say seeing Robert Jones train, seeing him, coming in before we started camp, seeing him push that steel around in the gym, that just opened me up. Like, and seeing him and Jeff Blake come back after getting drafted after their first mini camp, it was something like, well, man, how about if I could do that? And so, like I would say, it was some tremendous, some of the games, the monumental games coming back from behind, that Peach Bowl game, the things that Jeff, the phenomenal things that Jeff Blake did, like supernatural things that Jeff Blake did. You remember when we were in Southern Miss, we went to Southern Miss, and Luke Fisher messed his shoulder up.
Yeah,
he was out there strapped, had his right or left hand strapped, still running, catching balls.
Yeah, like, I remember that. Yep.
Like, it was, we really, it's a few things that I've learned that in, you know, for teams to have success, and I've seen it twice, you know, my freshman year at East Carolina and my rookie season at Green Bay, having a cluster of players in some kind of way, that leadership. You remember the Big Team Little Me t-shirts?
Oh yeah.
You know, that leadership on there, and just the determination, because, you know, sometimes a team is going to have the momentum. If another team have a momentum, you got to have faith, and you got to just get through that little 10-minute gap. Sometimes it's two quarters that a team have momentum. You just got to be prying and have faith in yourself and your teammates, and just keep chipping away. And look at us, you know, how many points down were we in the fourth quarter in the Peach Bowl?
I don't remember, but it was
Was it 13? Was it 17 points?
Kind of like, yeah, it was kind of a couple touchdowns somewhere in there.
Yes.
I mean, it was, it was kind of a tough situation, but we never had a problem with winning in the fourth quarter that year, though.
Yeah.
That was something we were kind of known for.
Yeah.
And so that was great stuff.
Yeah, Coach, being able to experience that and just seeing that just that leadership, man, that year was something else.
Well, I was very impressed with the way that you the gains that you made over the years that you were there. And, you know, none of the offensive linemen wanted to block you in practice because they always said that you gave them a headache. So I remember that very distinctly.
Yeah.
So, you weren't about to take it easy on anybody.
You know, I'll say this. What really gave me a lot of confidence, just little builders, little confident builders. And, you know, that confidence just don't just come in just a full handout, 50 pounds of confidence. It's little by little by little by little, you know, gains by gains by gains. My first 2 years having a spar with Tom Scott, you know, every practice, and the, you know, seeing, okay, man, I kind of was handling him a little bit. And, you know, as time passed, you'd be like, man, I'm kind of doing my thing a little bit, you know, and he was a senior and I'm practicing and, you know, just having somebody like that, because Tom Scott, what may he rest in peace, may he rest in peace.
Yeah.
He was big, Coach. But oh, yeah. He was athletic.
Yeah.
He was a freak. He was athletic, you know? And so having somebody to spar up against with, you know, and you know, it's a blessing. It was a blessing. Blessing in disguise.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tom could have stayed in the NFL a lot longer, but he had a little bit of issue with his weight or whatever, you know. So, but, yeah, he was a great player and he was a great athlete.
Yes.
And, I mean, it actually kind of reminds me, you know, when I went up to Carolina the first year, I had Julius Peppers. And, you know, Julius was like a huge tailback kind of guy, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and Tom was the same thing. Of course, he was bigger than Julius, but he was very athletic as well. So let's kind of go to, well, let's talk a little bit about your class. EMAC was in that class, right?
EMAC.
Junior.
Junior. Wow. EMAC Junior. Charles Booth.
Yeah.
Dwight Linville. I talk with him every blue moon.
Yeah.
Scott Richards. No, nah, Scott came in 92 as a freshman.
Yeah.
Who else came in with me? Tony Howard. He was a big guy that had a lot of potential. I'm gonna tell you that.
Yes, he was.
He had a lot of potential.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's amazing.
Junior got in the Hall of Fame, and I was glad to see that a couple years ago. And then, of course, EMAC had a great NFL career.
Yes. And
EMAC's career came straight from hard work. I mean, he had a tremendous work ethic.
Yes.
And yes. I still talk to EMAC quite a bit.
Yeah, good guy, good guy. Who's another? You know what? Jairus McPhail came out with us, but he came. Did Jairus McPhail come from a JUCO? He was a JUCO.
I don't remember.
Yeah, but Jairus came out. We were seniors. Me, him, and Junior. Junior Smith came out before. Because, you know, I wound up my third year, I wound up getting a medical red shirt.
Right.
Getting a medical red shirt.
Yeah, and that's why I asked you if you had a red shirt, because you said you graduated in 96. So I had to try to figure it out.
Yes. So EMAC, he got red shirted. You know, another guy too, his roommate, he was always EMAC's roommate, David Crombie.
Oh yeah, David Crombie became a very renowned doctor.
Yes, yes.
And David Crombie, this is a crazy story, and I'll tell you real quick. My mom and dad retired in Florida. My dad had some very serious problems going on with him, with his health. And he was trying to find the right doctor. This is when I was coaching at UNC. And he was he went in to see the doctor, and he had a pair of UNC shorts on. And the doctor asked him, "Hey, where'd you get those shorts?" And he said, "Well, my son coached at UNC. He said, "Oh, really? Well, I went to East Carolina." He said, "My son coached there too." It was David Crombie. Yeah. My dad ended up with David Crombie as his doctor. It was unbelievable.
Wow.
And David was like, "Oh, no, this is family now." So he really took care of my dad.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
I saved my dad's life. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I will always be indebted to David Crombie.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, God is amazing, brother.
Yes, yes, yes.
So let's talk about growing up, and you know, talk about maybe a little bit about the town where you grew up. You said you grew up in the country.
Country.
And did y'all raise any crops, any tobacco? What?
No, I didn't. We didn't raise any crop. We, you know, my father always had mother and father always had a little farm. I mean, a little garden in the backyard, you know, I came up, my mother was she's a college graduate. My father, he came up, a sharecropper. He probably went third or fourth grade. He didn't go no further than third or fourth grade. Cause back then families that were sharecropping, they didn't, you know, a lot of kids, they had to drop out.
Yeah.
You know, second, third, fourth, fifth grade to help the family, you know.
Yeah.
And so, I grew up around a lot of my cousins. You know, my uncle, he brought football to the family. He played college football at South Carolina State, and you know, he brought football to the family. Me, my brother, myself, and all three of his sons, like all five or six of us, we all received college football scholarships coming out of high school. And so he really pushed that thing. You know, he never would have thought I would have turned out to do what I've achieved with football, because I was always the music guy.
Gotcha.
I was always the music guy. When I saw my brother, because in the ninth grade, my brother was a senior, and Uncle George's oldest son was in the 11th grade. And so when my brother got a scholarship and my older cousin got a scholarship, I just had that thought, like, man, if I was to work out and do what I need to do, man, I might be able to, you know, my parents may not have to pay for me to go to school, you know. And, you know, at that point in time, they didn't have YouTube. They didn't have all of these things to where I would have had, that I had access to see how people are doing things to have success with the music skills. You know what I'm saying? With their music, right?
Right.
The music talent. You know, that was right in front of me, and I was just like, you know what? Let me go ahead and get in this gym. And you know, and it worked out. But definitely, I went to Strom Thurmond High School in Johnston, South Carolina. That Johnston, South Carolina, is the peach capital of South Carolina. And at the time, even though Georgia is the peach state, more peaches were, you know, came out of South Carolina. And so around my football field, like if you was flying over my football field, you see a building with nothing but peach or acres of peaches all around it, you know. So deep in the country, Johnston, South Carolina.
Yeah, yep. So there's some two of them songs about Georgia peaches.
Yes, sir.
So how about who introduced you to your spiritual life?
So these were two stages, which is very interesting, Coach. The year that I was put on medical red shirt. I don't know whether my father would tell me that I was going through some tough times, because, you know, I guess I'd never been injured before and, you know, having to rehab and stuff. And so around that time in 1993, I built a relationship with this student. He wasn't a football player, named Sam Hunt. And through him, I gave my life to Christ. And, you know, just went through that process, the spiritual journey, you know, went through that spiritual journey. So Sam Hunt and another person is in 2000, when I retired from football and I was coming to South Carolina to rehab and everything. This friend of the family, he married into the family, Michael Newton Jr. At the time, he was an aspiring strategic lifestyle coach. And so, you know, Mike had always seen me, you know, playing in church, maybe in the late 90s, I think he had a Christian rap group at one time, and I did you know, produce a couple of records for them. And so coming home from Miami, I had all my equipment and set up at my parents' house, you know, set up with my PT, my physical therapy in Aiken, South Carolina, and that's what I was doing every day. to coach. My leg was so, my right leg was so small. I had so much atrophy from that nerve damage. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But that at that moment, I knew that it was time for me to do my music. I just knew that it was time for me to do my music. And so I got home and Michael Newton called me and he was just like, Wally, I know you're ready to do this music thing. He was just like, do you mind if I show you how to take your dream? Because I know you're a dreamer, and put a plan, set goals and put a plan behind those goals to get you there. Are you open to, I said, yes, let's do it. He was just like, but now if I'm going to do this, it's going to be back behind a spiritual journey. Like this is through God. Like this is the way that this is how I'm built to teach this. Right. And so, he was a strategic lifestyle coach, and he taught me how to sector off everything with, spiritual development every day, like a block of spiritual, what am I doing today to enhance my spiritual journey? What am I doing today to enhance my health journey? What am I doing today to enhance my relationship journey? Now I finally get to my firm. It was called his the category is called firm. So it's what I'm currently doing and in regards to careers or, you know, and what am I inspired to progress to in the next 10 years or the next 5 years. And so I got on board, man, and I learned how to set goals. He taught me how to pray over the goals. I mean, he put a lot of work into me to build me into what I am, you know. Over the past few years, you know, people that I know in the music industry, if it's 5 to 9 o'clock or 5 to 8 o'clock, they're going to be like, nah, man, Great Scott, he doing his family time. And so I acquired that thing of family time, you know, okay. You know, because family can get overseen a lot, like, you know, life happens fast and all of this stuff is going on with work and all this stuff is going on with this and that and that. And family is always going to be there. So how much am I investing into my family today? How much am I investing into my wife today, into my kids today? What do I have written this week to accomplish to make sure I'm doing with my parents now? Because, you know, my parents, they're in their 80s now, you know. And so it was really, it was Sam Hunt and Michael Newton Jr. that really kind of put me into those certain spiritual places in the midst of agony in career changes and it you know kind of put me into that in that right spot. So you know,
gotcha.
Part of my journey, coach.
Great stuff, man. Well, you know, I really wanted to do this podcast because I love to share you guys with the rest of the world because you guys meant a whole lot to me. It was a very special experience for me. And it's, you know, it's very interesting to me how many of the guys that I coach through, you know, I help coach through successful years, you know, how successful you are. And I always say that I coached a lot of guys who are men of God right now.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that. So that's what I'm trying to do myself, trying to lose myself to gain a kingdom. And that is my purpose. at this point in my life, so
that's great. That's
trying
great.
To learn the game of golf.
Yo, you're working on that, huh? Yeah, that's great. That's great, coach. That's great. You know,
Aiken, South Carolina. Now that's pretty close to where the Masters tournament is, I think.
Yeah, I grew up, on the far outskirts of the county where I went to school. My school's like I used to have to get up at 5:30 to get to my schools. You know, sometimes some kids can live on the far edge of a specific county, right? Yeah. And so, but where I grew up, my home is like, the Masters, that golf course is off Washington Road in Augusta, Georgia. I am like 15 minutes from there. And so I'm like 15 minutes from Aiken. And, you know, so in that area is called the CSRA. And so it's a, you know, a cluster of different cities and different towns around the Savannah River. Right.
Right.
And so that's where I grew up at. It's pretty cool.
Well, it rang a bell with me because I took a couple young golfers who actually both have scholarships to go play at ECU. They trained with me in my garage. So I took them down to the Masters and we actually stayed in Aiken the night before.
Okay. Yeah.
So that was just, you know, about a month ago or whatever. And So that kind of course, that rang a bell with me. Way back when in the 1980s, I coached at a high school and I actually had Jack Nicklaus's son.
Wow.
Played football with us. And so he actually was the guy who got me tickets to the Masters. So, So yeah, but that Aiken ring a bell.
Wow. That's awesome, man. That's awesome. That's a different experience.
No doubt. That's the second time I've been there.
Wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, well, Walter, we're going to bring this thing to a close. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on. It's been great to reconnect. And I know a lot of the Pirate faithful will want to hear your story. And hopefully we'll see each other again sometime on that ECU campus.
I know that's right. Yeah. Yes.
All right. Hey, this is Jeff Connors. Signing off for Absolute Empowerment. God bless, and we'll see you next week. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to Absolute Empowerment with Coach Jeff Connors on The Sports Objective. Join us every Monday night for a new edition of the show. Listen to the show pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. Be sure to follow us on social media at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter and TikTok, at TheSportsObjective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. As always, we appreciate you listening to the show, and go Pirates!